This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2024, held at Ephrata Business Center in Ephrata, Pennsylvania, on March 1 and 2, 2024.
Well, good afternoon. Okay. I guess that's a habit that I have from teaching school. We teachers, we like response from our students. So thank you, those of you who responded. Curriculum matters. So a few questions at the beginning here. I wasn't sure how to do this, but I think I'm going to just ask everybody who is currently serving on a school board, would you please stand? And as I expected, that's almost everybody, because after all, this is a school board institute. Now, those of you who are standing, if you have never taught school, please sit down. Oh my. All right, the rest of you may sit down. Thank you. You know, the slogan of the Marines is the few, the proud, the Marines. Well, I don't think that fits the mind of Christ to say the few, the proud, the school board members who have taught school. I served on a school board for 5 years before I started my career as a teacher. And when Linford asked me if I would be willing to give this topic, I agreed. Partly because as I thought back to my time as a school board member and the decisions that need to be made, and I had never taught. The only context I had for school was as a student. What do I know about what makes good curriculum? What do I know about good school policy? What works in the classroom? What doesn't? So I agreed to take this because I think that this is a need. That school boards, I'm sure you have questions. And you're welcome to come to the round table this evening to discuss your questions. What I'd like to do this afternoon is just give you some general things, and then, as Linford said, I don't necessarily have, I'm not prepared for a big talk, but I do have a few nuts and bolts things that we can go over this evening in the round table. By the way, just a little side note, it is possible to transition from the school board to the classroom. It does work. So, you know, maybe another 5 years if that question gets asked again, there'll be more people that remain standing. It has been a blessing to serve in the classroom these past 15 years. So let me talk about my experience and see if we can put this in a context that maybe you'll understand. Before I started teaching, I worked at a pallet recycler. And every summer since, I've been back. And when the school term's over this year, I plan to go back full time. And at this pallet company, he has, I believe it's 5 trucks and 140 trailers and 20 some docks. And so every day, somewhere between 20 to 35 trailers need moved. Now, there are different ways that you can move trailers. One way is like this. Doesn't cost you much. I think this tractor was somewhere around 15 grand when he bought it. First of all, it was a spare truck for the road. And then it developed some mechanical problems. It really wasn't fit for the road anymore, so it became our jockey truck. Now, a tractor that's meant for the road does not really make a very good jockey truck. Couple problems. One of the things is you have to get out and release the fifth wheel manually. You have to crank the dolly legs on the trailer every time you want to move them. So it's a lot of in and out, and crank, 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 and you know all that is. And this relic, neither the heat nor the AC worked. So it was a real gem. But it did work. The other thing is, when you have a jockey truck, you're making a lot of short turns because you're backing stuff in, and in one summer, it wore all the tread off the tires, off the drive tires. And you know, it's manual, so you got a clutch pedal there. And when you're backing into the docks, you don't want to just, you know, go full bore. You got to kind of ease it in. Well, that's a lot of clutch wear. And then your clutch is out of adjustment. You got to adjust it again. And soon the clutch brake doesn't work. And so you just kind of push in, hold it to the floor, and just, there, now it's in. It's kind of hard on it. But it did work. It did work. This past summer, this piece of equipment arrived on the lot. A lot more expensive. A little over $140,000. But the heat and AC work, which isn't really that important, but it has an automatic transmission. And you don't have to crank the dolly legs. You know, it's just a hydraulic hoist. You just pull the lever and whoosh, up goes the trailer. It's got a little button there. You can release the fifth wheel. With this piece of equipment, I could move three or four trailers in the time it took me to move one before. It's that much more efficient. Oh yeah, it costs a lot more, but it's a whole lot more efficient. Now before you think, we're thinking about curriculum. Before you get the idea that there's just one curriculum out there that's gonna, oh man, this is just the thing. Maybe not quite. You get a little bit of snow. With a single axle like that and no weight back there, without chains, you're not moving anything. All right? So you get the context here. As we think about curriculum, what you're really thinking about is you're making, as a board, you're making a decision that is going to affect your teachers and your students. So I would like to look at two things. Why does curriculum matter, and to what extent does it matter? First of all, why does curriculum matter? It matters because the right tools make the difference for teachers. Whatever your trade is, have you ever wished that you had this one certain tool that would just make your job a whole lot easier? You can relate to that? Now, I suppose that your school is probably like a lot of other schools in the Anabaptist community. And we unfortunately have a high turnover of teachers. We have a few that stick around for a couple of years. But mostly there's a lot of turnover. And a teacher who has taught a long time does not rely nearly as heavily on the textbook as a new teacher does. And if you have poor curriculum and an inexperienced teacher, you're in trouble. I mean, we all have to start somewhere. One of my students from the first year ended up being one of my co-teachers. And when I met her before school started, the year when she joined the staff, I mentioned something to her about having been one of my students, and hopefully that there was nothing in the experience when she was my student that would get in the way. And she said, "Well, you did the best you could." That was a nice way of saying it wasn't very good. It's okay, all right? We all have to start somewhere. But a clumsy curriculum makes the teacher's job that much more difficult. Not only that, the right tools can make a difference for the students as well. Because it's not just that the curriculum is just not a tool that the teacher uses. No, the students interact with the material as well. That's where the assignments come from, at least in most classrooms. The curriculum says this is the assignment. It is only the very experienced teachers who will be brave enough to venture out and say, "Well, yes, we're going to use this text, but here, are the assignments that I've created. Most of your teachers aren't going to do that. And so what kind of curriculum are you going to have? I would like to talk about two areas where I believe that curriculum makes a difference for the students. Probably the most obvious one is academically. So let's think about some of the different subjects and how it makes a difference for students. Mathematics. What is the point of mathematics? So students can make their way. I mean, think about financially, if you're a carpenter, a plumber, a homemaker. I mean, math is part of life, right? One of the things I would challenge you is think about the strength of your math curriculum. Does it teach the students problem-solving skills? Because you can have a curriculum that does very well at teaching the facts of math, but how well does your math curriculum teach the students that we know this and this and this? Now, where's the solution? How do they know? And, you know, oftentimes there'll be stuff in there that has nothing to do with solving the problem. And some of my students sometimes will say, well, what's this? Why? I don't get this. Well, what are we looking for? And soon they start to realize, well, that's just a number, but it has no relevance to the problem, really. Not to the solution, anyway. If your math curriculum just teaches the facts but doesn't teach them how to look at a problem and to take what you know and get to what you don't know, you maybe ought to look for a different math curriculum. Because otherwise, your students are not going to be well prepared for life. And really, that's what we're trying to do. We like that students come, but we're also glad to see them go. Don't get me wrong, not for that reason. But we're glad to see them go out into the world and use what they learned and be useful. Grammar. The longer I teach, the more this has become a burden to me. Language is such a beautiful thing. You ever think about it? You know, I'm standing here and I'm talking. The mechanics of that is I'm forcing air out of my lungs through my voice box. The vocal cords are vibrating. I'm moving my jaw, my lips, my tongue. And I'm making all of these different sounds. And it's going in your ears and you're interpreting it. Isn't that an amazing thing? And we can talk about things like a watch, or we can talk about things like grace. Abstract things. And God has made us in such a way that we can communicate with each other and we can express thoughts, feelings. It's a beautiful thing. Here's my burden, and I wish every school could do this. That we would focus on teaching our students. Yes, we want to know what a predicate adjective is. When I started teaching, I got the textbook and I opened it up and I looked, predicate adjective? I don't know what kind of animal that is. How many legs does it have? I had no idea. It's great to know that stuff, and actually it's very, very helpful. I'm glad that I understand grammar much better than I used to. Teaching helped me to understand grammar. And now when I look at some of Paul's sentences in his epistles, I can diagram them. Well, sort of. Because some of his, I'm not sure. Well, he didn't write in English. He wrote in Greek. But they're kind of rambling run-ons. But if you can see the clause, it helps you to know what the scriptures say. Okay? So understanding grammar is important. But where is the next generation's writer? Where's the next generation's public speaker? And I'm becoming more and more concerned that our grammar curriculum focuses too heavily on knowing the parts of speech and being able to diagram all that, and not enough on developing the skill of speaking and writing. Because after all, that's the point of it, right? The point of language is to use it, not just to know it in the head. So I challenge you to evaluate your grammar curriculum and to say, do we have a weakness here? Is there something that we can do? Do we need to add more writing assignments, more writing curriculum, more public speaking assignments? Jesus said, go ye into all the world and teach the gospel. That can be through writing or through speaking. And if we are not raising a generation of people who know how to understand language and how to put it to use, I know God, the Holy Spirit, is not limited. He can use uneducated fishermen and uneducated truck drivers. I know that. But I don't think that means we should purposely limit ourselves. God used Peter and he used Paul. Reading. This is a battle that we might as well face. And we might as well face it straight on. So I already said that I'm in my 15th year of teaching. And I can remember in my early years, I had classroom full, well, not full, because not everybody likes to read, but I had lots of voracious readers. Anymore? I'm fortunate if I have one dedicated reader in my classroom. Why? We're fighting a battle against the screen. I'm not sure what all the answers are, but I think one of the answers is in our reading curriculum. Your reading curriculum should be such that the pieces are engaging. Stories that appeal. I'm not talking about lighthearted, frivolous stuff. You can have weighty stuff that's well done, that teaches a moral. Not all reading curriculums are equal. You have to know what fits in to your school. Well, so much for the academics. I want to spend the rest of the next few minutes on what I believe is the bigger deal with curriculum. We're talking about the right tools make a difference for the students. We said they make a difference academically, that's true. More importantly, they make a difference spiritually and culturally. Does it make a difference if your math curriculum has stories about Mrs. Butler going to the hairdresser, or about the winning percentage of the sports team? Does that make a difference? I think it does. I don't know about in your school. In ours, we have enough of struggle to keep the NFL out of the classroom. And again, it's partly because of our exposure through the web. It used to be that we didn't have television, and so we didn't know about a lot of this stuff. But now it's all right there. Do the story problems in your math curriculum match the lifestyle that you want your students to live when they're out of school? In reading, who are the heroes in the story? Now, my youngest brother taught for a number of years, and he and I had this discussion a couple months ago. He said, did you ever think about it, about how liberal our parents were in their selections of reading material for us? Yeah, I've thought about that. I've read some stuff in my childhood that I probably wouldn't allow my children to read. And we can have all different convictions on this. But the The books that we expose our children to are formative. Whether we like to admit it or not, they are formative. Writers do not write by accident. They write on purpose. And when they write, whether it's a biography about somebody who was actually alive at one time, or whether it's a fictional character, they're framing it in a certain way. They have a worldview. They have an idea of what's good, what's honorable, what's dishonorable. The reading material that we provide our students helps to form their thought processes about what's good and right. Now, in my classroom, I've read some books. I read One Woman Against the Reich and The Happiest Man Alive, or Happiest Man on Earth. I forget exactly what the title is. Any of you ever heard either of those titles? Happiest Man on Earth, I think, is the title of that one. Eddie Jaku, he actually experienced the concentration camps. And I don't remember the lady's name, One Woman Against the Reich, living in Germany during the Holocaust, and a Christian woman. And the perspective of those two books is very different. I exposed my students to both of them. Eddie, toward the end of that book, he talks about his view of the perpetrators of the Holocaust and the question of forgiving them. And he said, never, never. The Christian woman expresses the mind of Christ throughout the book of love toward those evil people. Part of it, the reason I did that in high school, is because I think it's good for them to get the perspective. We can talk about what's the difference. Especially younger children, we need to be very, very careful. I hope you all were listening closely to Arlen's talk this morning about history. Well, he was talking about economics and civics. I agree with Brother Arlen wholeheartedly. There has been a major shift among our people in the last 10 years or so. We have more non-voting Republicans than ever. I think I'm safe in saying that Jesus is not happy. I do not understand why any Anabaptist school would use a curriculum that teaches children things like Stonewall Jackson was a great Christian man. He held Sunday school for his troops. Really? Really? What are we trying to do? Are we trying to assimilate into middle class America, the heart of the Republican Party? Or are we trying to disciple people to follow Jesus? Let's face it, most of us here are citizens of the United States, and we have a few Canadian friends here too. God bless you. Thank you for coming. We'll pray for you when you go home. We live here in America in a land of tremendous freedom and opportunity. This is one of the things I, from time to time, tell my students. You can be a faithful Christian under capitalism. You can be a faithful Christian under socialism. You can be a faithful Christian under communism. Amen? Amen. You can be faithful Christian in Bangladesh, in the United States, yes, in Canada too. Anywhere in the world. We're citizens of the heavenly kingdom. That should be our primary concern, that the kingdom of Christ is advanced, that more and more people take up citizenship in that kingdom. I implore you, be very purposeful with your history curriculum. science. Maybe you don't think this one fits into spiritual. Are you aware of differences between Protestant thought and Anabaptist thought? You realize that the Protestants are descendants of the Enlightenment, the Age of Reason. The Protestants put a lot of emphasis on theology. The early Anabaptists did not focus on that so much. They said over and over again, we are not called to judge the scriptures. We're called to obedience. You can spend a lot of time arguing, wrangling over what does this word mean, what does that word mean, and it does not in one iota lead to a more obedient life. When it comes to science, and I'm thinking especially of evolution, be very, very careful, because there are Protestant publishers out there. The way they treat evolution, they tend to scoff at the evolutionist. And the evolutionists have some problems, they have some holes. But you know, as creationists, there's some things that we can't explain either. We can't. And one of my friends who has some college in science told me, he said, the problem with some of these Protestant curriculum when it comes to science is that they tend to portray the evolutionists as a bunch of bumbling dummies. But he said, what's going to happen is if your students go to college, their college professors are going to throw questions at them that they can't answer. And it may overthrow their faith. Evolutionists are not stupid people. Some of them are very intelligent. If we get to a point in our spiritual life where we have to reason everything out, then where's faith? Where's faith? We live by faith, not by, who can understand God, right? Be careful about the mindset of the science curriculum. And I appreciate the work that Christian Light is doing in making good science curriculum. I really appreciate it. I field tested their biology last term. I really appreciated their emphasis, the way they dealt with ecology and evolution. All right, well, to what extent does it matter? Which is more important, excellent teachers or excellent curriculum?
Excellent teachers.
You think so? So says a teacher. You have two things in the classroom that the students interact with. The one is the curriculum. The other is the teacher. The one is non-living. The other one's living. Which one's going to have the greater influence, do you think? Not even a question, is it? While it's important, board members, to think about curriculum, I just want to throw this in. You're far better off getting an excellent teacher and having a mediocre curriculum. That doesn't mean that we get shoddy curriculum, okay? I'm just saying when it comes to which one's most important, don't forget the fact that the live human being in the room is more important than the book. More important than the book. To what extent does it matter? Poor curriculum can lead to a lot of frustration for the teacher and the students, both of them. Currently in my classroom this year, we have a consumer math curriculum by a prominent Christian publisher. The students are frustrated with it. I'm frustrated with it for multiple reasons. I don't have time to go into all of that. Do your homework on the book. If you come to the round table, maybe we can talk about what that means to do that homework. But do your homework. This book is a disaster. I'm not sure who the editors were, but I feel sorry for them. I hope hope they get more training or get fired or something. Because the answer key doesn't match with the solution key. There's two different answers there. And it creates a lot of frustration. It takes a lot of wisdom. And I know, as a school board member, when it came time to make decisions about the curriculum, I relied heavily on the suggestions of the administrator, of the teachers. And that's not all wrong. There's some benefit in that. They're actually working with it. If we go back to the jockey truck illustration, for several years now, I've been talking to the boss there at the pallet shop. I said, you know, you really ought to have a jockey truck. The business is growing. It'd be a whole lot more efficient. We could get, it's better all around. He was always hesitant to do it. I guess he figured, why listen to the part-time help? Do pay attention to your teachers, but do keep in mind that teachers do come and go, and you don't want to be changing curriculum every time you get a new teacher. That's not a good plan either. Pick a good one and stick with it. And if you have more questions, I'll be glad to have you come to the roundtable discussing. Thank you.